Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Where are you listening to this right now? Maybe at your home? Maybe the doors are locked? Maybe you're by yourself? Or maybe you're not. Could it be that someone's watching? Welcome to Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie. I'm the titular Sean.
And I'm the very titular Carrie.
And in this show, we dive and we dig into, everything spooky, scary, unsolved, unexplained, and try to find some answers.
Mm-hmm.
So, Caroline, why don't you, what was that spooky intro of mine all about? Why don't you give the listener a look at what we're talking about today?
Well, I'm not sure what the spooky intro is all about. I found it a little sexy, to be honest. But...
Biased audience.
I actually want to start off with a question, Sean.
Okay.
Okay.
Shoot.
Have you ever had a secret admirer?
Have I ever had a secret admirer?
Mm-hmm.
I don't... You know what? It's possible, but if I have, they were so secret.
That even you didn't know
that. They didn't make themselves known, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well... I don't know if it was just me, but as a kid, I remember like really wanting a secret admirer. Like it was so exciting, the thought of it.
Now, were you ever a secret admirer? Were you ever on the other side sending someone little secret notes?
Probably. I don't remember doing that, but that's the kind of like bullshit little me would pull. I don't know if I was just like influenced by Babysitter's Club books or something, but it seemed so cool and so romantic and mysterious.
Is that a big plot element of Babysitter's Club's
books? I think there's literally one that's like, I don't know, Christy and the Secret Admirer or whatever. Like it's all about that.
Does it get as sinister as the story of The Watcher?
Spoiler alert. No, I don't think it does.
Okay.
Because they were like children. So that would be very disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
But no, not many things get as sinister as the story of The Watcher, which, thank you for the segue, Sean, is what we are going to be discussing today. So on this episode, I'll be taking the reins the whole time to tell an ooky spooky story about an unknown writer. I know.
And I can't wait.
So this story has kind of a smaller scope, so it's not Jack the Ripper, the Zodiac. I know that sounds very exciting. We will deep dive into those assholes sometime.
Uh-huh.
This is a less well-known story, but it's still very sinister and very, very weird.
Love it.
So this story is about the Watcher, as you said. This isn't a, like, Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer situation kind of watcher. Like, he's not like a fuddy-duddy daddy or whatever. It's more like, ew, who's that weirdo looking in our window?
Yeah, no, I loved the video game, The Watcher 3. I played it for hundreds of hours.
Oh, yeah. That's the kind of name that this guy gave himself, or girl, you know, we're equal opportunity here.
Oh, so this person referred to themselves as the Watcher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll be mainly referencing an excellent article by Reeves Wideman in The Cut called The Haunting of a Dream House. So credit where credit's due, because Wideman really details the case with the intensity of like a thrilling page turner. So every discussion of this case, it starts with that article.
Awesome.
So the case of the Watcher begins like this. Derek and Maria Broadus moved into their new home in Westfield, New Jersey.
Broadus, these are the parents of Calvin Broadus, one presumes, Snoop Dogg?
Yeah, sure. No, not at all.
What year is this?
This was around 2014.
Oh, this is recent.
Mm-hmm. Which was another reason I found it very interesting. So they moved into their new home in Westfield, New Jersey, ready to tackle some renovations.
Now, Westfield, New Jersey, I have cousins. We have cousins who live in Jersey, mm-hmm. in Westfield specifically.
In that town, and they heard about this when it was going on, so we might have a little comment from them coming as well. So Maria had grown up in Westfield, a few blocks away from their new home, and she always wanted to raise her family in the town, which is why they decided to settle down there. Westfield was recently ranked among the top 100 wealthiest towns in America. So it's pretty bougie, with its 30,000 residents mostly consisting of well-to-do families, with many parents working in nearby New York City. Mm-hmm. So Derek Broadus had turned 40 recently and gotten a promotion, and the Broaduses dropped like a swanky $1.3 million on this house. That, we're going to find out later, probably should have had a discount attached to it.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So by June 2014, they hadn't moved in yet, but they had started some renovations to get the house ready for them, too. So Derek was in the house when an envelope addressed to, quote, the new owner was dropped off in the mail. The note claimed as follows, according to a lawsuit that we'll discuss later.
Okay.
So this is directly from the note. Dearest new neighbor at 657 Boulevard, that's the address, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood.
Oh, okay, no, this is friendly.
Okay. 657 Boulevard has been the subject of my family for decades now, and as it approaches its 110th birthday, I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming.
Sorry, what?
My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched in the 1960s. It is now my time. Do you know the history of the house? Do you know what lies within the walls of 657 Boulevard? Why are you here? I will find out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It went on to identify the family's Honda minivan and mentioned the renovations of the home that they were currently completing, saying, now that they have to flaunt it, they pay the price. Tisk, tisk, tisk. Bad move. You don't want to make 657 Boulevard unhappy.
That's the address of the house?
Yeah, I love characterizing inanimate objects with emotions. That's not creepy at all.
Maybe the letter's from the house.
Maybe.
But it's being very passive-aggressive.
Let's see what else they wrote.
Okay.
So there were also references to the Broadus' kids, saying, you have children. I have seen them. So far, I think there are three that I have counted. Are there more on the way? Do you need to fill the house with the young blood I requested? Better for me. Was your old house too small for the growing family? Or was it greed to bring me your children? Once I know their names, I will call to them and draw them to me.
Oh, my God.
That's not all. Who am I? There are hundreds and hundreds of cars that drive by 657 Boulevard each day. Maybe I am in one. Look at all the windows you can see from 657 Boulevard. Maybe I am in one. Look out of the many windows in 657 Boulevard at all the people who stroll by each day. Maybe I am one. Welcome, my friends. Welcome. Let the party begin. The Watcher.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just, It'd be one thing to just leave a note saying, get out of the house, I'm gonna kill your family.
Mm-hmm.
This person has taken the extra step of putting a coat of, like, very, very scary, creepy paint on it.
Yeah, it's, like, vaguely threatening, but you can't really pin down what's threatening about it.
Yeah, well, it's that he's going to call to your children,
something
like the
about
Pied
Piper.
Young blood.
It's very upsetting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the family hadn't even moved in yet, and they're already getting, like, the worst kind of junk mail you could possibly think of.
Yet, so after this, they did move in?
Well, so they were still working on the renovations, so it wasn't like they were going to move in the next day. Now, Derek, the patriarch of this family, you know, receives this letter after 10 p.m. alone in the house and promptly turned off all the lights and called the Westfield Police Department because he was understandably very shook by this whole thing. So the dispatched officer responded to the letter with, "What the fuck is this?" Which honestly is the appropriate reaction.
Is that a direct quote?
Yes. He also told Derek to get some construction equipment off the porch so the watcher couldn't toss it through the window. So that's comforting.
Yeah, interesting. Although if you want something to toss through a window.
I mean, you could bring it, right? But I guess it's easier if you don't have to, like, BYO.
BYO construction equipment?
Yes, or, you know, boulder or whatever. So that night, Derek went back to their old home where Maria and the kids were packing up, and he told her about the letter. So
you don't want to hide that one.
No, and I'm glad he didn't. That would be like a classic movie thing, like a horror movie thing of, oh, I won't tell the wife.
I don't want to worry her.
Mm-hmm. So I'm glad he told her.
Mm-hmm. So if I ever get a letter like this.
You are absolutely telling me.
Okay.
Yes. All right. So after that, they immediately emailed John and Andrea Woods, the previous owners who sold them the house. And I imagine the email read something like, oh, what the fuck is this? But essentially, it asked if they had any clue who the watcher was or if they'd written the letter, maybe. Because it included the words, I asked the Woods to bring me young blood and it looks like they listened. So they just really wanted to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. The Woods?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if it's like a surrounding forest. I don't know if it's James Woods. I think both options are equally unsettling.
Yeah, he could be involved here. Yeah. Absolutely.
So Andrea, one of the people that sold them the house, she replied the next day saying that they had never experienced anything like that in their 23 years living at 657 Boulevard. But they had received a letter signed the Watcher a few days before they moved out.
I'm sorry, what?
They had also received a letter. They just hadn't received it more than a few days before they moved out. So they didn't decide to mention that little detail.
Well, what did that letter say?
I'm not exactly sure. Ooh. I don't know if it was as threatening, but they had never gotten anything like it before. So they just threw it up and thought that was that. But it wasn't. Clearly.
It still wasn't?
No. That day, Maria Broaddus went with the Woodses to the police station, where they were advised not to tell anyone about the letters because literally all their new neighbors were now suspects. Welcome to the boulevard, I guess.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, so Derek and Maria, understandably, spent the next weeks jumping at everything. Maria wouldn't let the kids out of her sight without calling out to them. Derek freaked out when a neighborhood woman taking a tour of the renovations, which, like, is that a thing? Like, you're renovating a house and just random people come in? I don't know, but apparently in Westfield it is. She said to him, it'll be nice to have some young blood in the neighborhood.
I'm sorry, what? That's not, like, a normal thing to say.
No.
It's so specific.
It's specific, but it's, like, also, okay, young blood, like, is a phrase.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a thing where, is everyone around gaslighting me? Like, am I going crazy?
Oh, a hot fuzz, the greater good situation.
Yeah. And at that point, they still hadn't moved in because of all this. 2 weeks after the first letter, Maria saw a familiar thick black writing, now addressed to Mr. and Mrs. Braddis, not Broadus, on a piece of mail, and immediately called the police, presumably before even opening it.
Misspelled. But when the first time they didn't write the name, the first time they just said our new neighbors.
I think that was it, yeah.
Don't serial killers sometimes, this isn't a serial killer yet. don't serial killers sometimes like misspell stuff on purpose?
I think so. Yeah. So the new letter continued in the creepiness. I read, "Welcome again to your new home at 657 Boulevard. The workers have been busy, and I have been watching you unload carfuls of your personal belongings. The dumpster is a nice touch. Have they found what is in the walls yet? In time they will. I am pleased to know your names now and the names of the young blood you have brought to me. You certainly say their names often." So presumably because she had been calling out for them constantly.
The children.
Yeah, in fear of some creep stealing them or, you know, whatever. So the watcher went on to correctly identify the three children by name and birth order, asking after one of the Broadus' daughters by saying, "Is she the artist in the family?" Because apparently the watcher had seen her using an easel. But the easel area was inside in an enclosed porch hidden from the street by vegetation.
No windows that you could see through?
I think you can't see it from the street, but maybe from a different vantage point you can. Like possibly a surrounding house.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So the rest of the letter went as follows. 657 Boulevard is anxious for you to move in. It has been years and years since the young blood ruled the hallways of the house. Have you found all the secrets it holds yet? Will the young blood play in the basement, or are they too afraid to go down there alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. It is far away from the rest of the house. If you were upstairs, you would never hear them scream. Will they sleep in the attic, or will you all sleep on the second floor? Who has the best bedrooms facing the street? I'll know as soon as you move in. It will help me to know who is in which bedroom. Then I can plan better.
Wow.
All of the windows and doors in 657 Boulevard allow me to watch you and track you as you move through the house. Who am I? I am the watcher and have been in control of 657 Boulevard for the better part of two decades now. The Woods family turned it over to you. It was their time to move on and kindly sold it when I asked them to. I pass by many times a day. 657 Boulevard is my job, my life, my obsession. And now you are too, Braddis family. Welcome to the product of your greed. Greed is what brought the last three families to 657 Boulevard, and now it has brought you to me. Have a happy moving in day. You know I will be watching.
A lot of references to greed.
Greed, blood, watching.
Well, all the stuff about the blood, the young blood, the children will stay, the stuff about the basement, reminds me of The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So much with, like, the house just wanting the people, especially the kids, to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
Forever.
Yeah. And because of those direct mentions of the kids, the Broadduses stopped bringing them over to the house while they were renovating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plans to move in were put on hold. And a few weeks later, a third letter asked them, "Where have you gone to? 657 Boulevard is missing you." Like, bitch, trying to avoid you.
It's so weird that it always says 657 Boulevard and it drops the street name.
Yeah, it's like this weird thing where they're the watcher, but they're also the house, or they're talking about what the house wants.
Like they're connected to the house, like they're serving the house's needs.
Yeah, almost like a weird...
You're just going to have to push through, it's okay. The dog's going to make it onto these recordings.
Like a weird Dracula Renfield sort of thing. I don't know, but that's kind of the vibe I'm getting.
I want to take a moment to tell you about my podcast, Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage. In 1984, a woman named Phyllis Cottle was abducted in broad daylight, tortured, and left to die in a burning car in Akron, Ohio. At the time, I was a rookie reporter covering this horrific story. Since then, I've reported every kind of crime imaginable. I've been able to leave most of them at work, but not this one. The one that buried itself under my skin and stayed put. Phyllis Cottle was a badass woman, and I want to tell you her story. A production of Evergreen Podcasts and signature title of the Killer Podcast Network, you can find Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage wherever you get your podcasts. Discover more great true crime and paranormal programming at killerpodcast.com.
So there were a few clues aside from these creepy letters.
Why hasn't anyone written this movie yet?
Oh, we'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there, yeah. There were a few clues, but there were some. The letters, when they were processed through the mail, were processed in Kearney, which is the U.S. Postal Service's distribution center in northern New Jersey. The postmark from the first letter was June 4th, which was the day before the sale was public, because the Woodses had never put up a for sale sign.
Okay.
So I don't think it was like a Zillow situation where you just know that it's on sale. And it was also postmarked just a day after contractors arrived to start renovations. So Derek began to suspect the Langford family who lived next door. He thought maybe they had something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So Peggy Langford was in her 90s, and several of her children, all in their 60s, still lived with her.
Hmm.
So they were odd, but apparently harmless. One of the sons, Michael, didn't work and was described as kind of a Boo Radley character.
Interesting.
From To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yep, yep.
And we all know what happened to Boo Radley in To Kill a Mockingbird, so I don't want to give that theory, like, so much credence.
Mm-hmm.
And then bring down this guy. But Michael was interviewed by police, like, right after the first letter arrived. He denied any knowledge. The detective on the case told the Broaddus's basically that he thought it was likely Michael. However, there wasn't any hard evidence, and the police chief told the Broaddus's there was nothing else they could do at that point.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What's Michael's motive? He just doesn't like new people?
He's weird. Like, that's basically it, is that he's just like a neighborhood character.
A neighborhood kook.
Neighborhood Boo Radley. Always fun to have.
All right, so a local kook.
Mm-hmm.
Is there more?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So at that point, the Broadduses began their own investigation, with Derek becoming especially obsessed with it. He set up webcams in the house and literally spent nights crouched in the dark waiting to see if he could spot anyone watching the house at close range.
Crouched in the dark?
Mm-hmm.
Like Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He made a map marking when each of 657's neighbors had moved in, with the Langfords being the only ones there since the 1960s. Now, remember, they had referenced the father watching in the 60s, so he figured that could correlate with that. And he had overlays on this map highlighting possible sightlines for his daughter's easel and a circle for approximate range of earshot. So he was like that gif of Charlie from It's Always Sunny.
Oh,
with,
yeah,
like,
with all the yarn and the thumbtacks.
Mm-hmm. So he wanted to estimate who might have heard Maria yelling their kids' names. So he tried to figure out how, like, I'm just imagining him walking down the street, like, calling back and seeing, you know, if Maria could hear from the house from different areas along the boulevard.
And I'm picturing him in a mostly empty house. They've stopped moving furniture in, and mm-hmm. he's just sitting in a corner, chalk formulas written all over the walls,
mm-hmm.
Maps and yarn and thumbtacks, and just cackling to himself.
Yeah, pretty much. That's how I imagine it. So once he made this map, he put on all those overlays. Only a few homes fit both criteria.
Okay.
The Broaddus's also employed a private investigator and reached out to multiple former FBI agents for their professional opinions.
They just know a bunch of former FBI agents?
I don't know. Like, I don't know what you Google for that. Maybe there were FBI agents that are, like, freelancing as investigators now. I'm not sure how it works. But they did find some. But despite all that, their focus still remained on the Langfords. In cooperation with the Westfield police, the Broaddus's sent a letter to the Langfords announcing plans to tear down the house, hoping to prompt a response. Basically, like, to egg them on, you know, if one of them was writing to
precious them. House is going to get knocked down.
Mm-hmm. What are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was no response.
We're your workers. All three of us are on strike. What are you going to do about it?
Pretty much. Eventually, they hired lawyer Lee Levitt, who met with several members of the Langford family, along with their attorney, to show them the letters, along with photos explaining how their house was one of the few vantage points from which the children's easel could be seen, as noted on Derek's map. Which I'm sure was a totally normal thing to bring to the police station.
Well, no, but this is Derek's vindication. This is the family has been, the family won't even look at him anymore.
Look at the map! Look at the map!
He hasn't showered in 3 weeks, and mm-hmm. finally, vindication for Derek.
Mm-hmm. Well, the meeting grew tense, as you could expect.
Mm-hmm.
And the Langfords insisted Michael was innocent. There was DNA discovered on one of the envelopes.
Hey.
Now, that was tested and found to belong to a woman, or a female. However, when tested against major suspects or players in the whole investigation, like Maria Broaddus herself,
mm-hmm.
or Abby Langford, who was Michael's sister, who I think was also in her late 50s or 60s, no match was found. So none of the women involved in any way were tested to be a match. Now, this could have just been someone at the post office or their mail person or whatever.
Yeah, this was handled by a letter carrier. And it's not like there was a pandemic happening then. The mailman or mailwoman, I guess, probably just held the envelope with a bare hand, right?
Yeah. And I'm sure they tested the obvious places like the envelope seal and the stamp to see if there was any saliva DNA. And maybe they were trying that. But, DNA can come from anywhere. It's kind of like the DNA in the John Brene Ramsey case, which we'll talk about sometime in the future.
Yeah, that's an uplifting story.
So uplifting. So after the DNA and accusing the Langfords and everything, there was still the whole rest of the neighborhood to consider. The Broaddus's... Yeah, well,
at this point, are they treating the Langfords as not suspects anymore?
I think the police are. Or at least it's kind of like, well, if they're doing it, like, we have no proof of that.
Right, they've been cleared.
Yeah. So they kind of have to broaden their horizons, so to speak, even if the Broaddus is still thinking, oh, it's probably them.
Broaddus their horizons.
So the PI found two child sex offenders living within a few blocks. So.
Okay.
The family's house painter had also noticed something strange during the renovations.
Tell me.
The couple behind 657 Boulevard kept their lawn chairs weirdly close to the Broaddus' property. He stated that once when he was looking out the window, an older man was sitting in one of the chairs facing 657 Boulevard and not his own house.
I mean, that's weird.
Well, I was thinking about this, and I don't know how suspicious I find this. Like, maybe that's the direction the sun comes from to shine down, and he's, like, working on his base tan, you know? Like, he's not gonna...
He could be, absolutely, but it's...
Or it's the opposite direction, he's reading a book or something.
But it's a little weird. You've had...
It's weird, but, like, explainable.
But, like, if your backyard is adjacent, like, this is the family that lives behind you...
Mm-hmm.
And their Adirondack chairs are, like, real close to the property line.
Listen,
and facing your yard? That is
it.
Strange.
I wouldn't do it. But we were like, friends with our neighbors, and they would have a couple of Adirondack chairs there, and it wasn't close to our property line, but it faced our direction because that's where the sun shines.
And you put a little fire pit on the property line, you both reach across and toast your marshmallows.
I wish we had a fence, but... So, I don't know how weird I find that. Like, it's... I wouldn't do it. But it's explainable pretty easily.
Yeah, it could be innocent, and it's definitely something you would notice once you were looking for a pattern.
Right, and there's a lot of those things in this case. So by late 2014, the investigation was at a complete standstill. The watcher had left no digital trail, no fingerprints, no identifiable DNA, There's nothing substantial aside from creepy letters and a northern New Jersey postmark. But the family couldn't in good conscience move in after everything that had happened and subject their family to, like, possible real threat. So they tried to sell the home. Easy peasy, right?
I want to know what's in the walls.
I mean, yeah, obviously. Me too. So they put the home for sale. Nothing panned out. In June 2015, they filed a legal complaint against the original owners, the Woodses, arguing that the Woodses should have disclosed the letter just as they had the fact that water sometimes got in the basement. You know?
Well, but that was after the sale, right?
I think it was after the sale, like right before they were going to move in, but they're arguing that they should have told them anyway.
Well, in Jersey, you have to disclose if somebody died in your home, right?
I believe so.
Here's a question. If you sold the home and then somebody was murdered after the closing, do you then have to tell the buyer about that?
Presumably the buyer would hear about that.
Well, yeah. They probably would.
But I don't know. Maybe that's like a legal loophole.
A legal loophole.
Oh, great. I don't have to tell them about this murder.
If you're going to do any home murders, do it after you sell the house.
Pro tip from mm-hmm. Aiden Scary. Mm-hmm.
And then they cannot prosecute.
That's not real legal advice. Don't listen to us.
I don't think they can prosecute.
Anyway, a neighbor told The Cut that after the news broke, she and 10 or so of her neighbors had gathered into the street to puzzle out who might have sent the letters, which is a weird thing to do.
Yeah, repeat that.
So the journalist writing this article, Reeves mm-hmm. Weideman.
Yes.
A neighbor told Reeves that after the news broke, presumably of the letters, she and 10 or so of her neighbors had gathered in the street to puzzle out who might have sent the letters.
Gathered in the street.
Yeah, like COVID style.
I was going to say, that like sounds like something that would happen this month. Yeah, well, okay.
It's a weird thing to do in the street. Like
6 feet apart, wearing masks.
Maybe they were trying to figure out, kind of like Derek was, the vantage points of everything.
Looking around, like, yeah. How could you have seen into that window?
But imagine you're Derek and you look out the window and there's 10 people just like huddled in the streets looking back and forth at your house. You feel like you're in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, the angry mob is finally descending with their torches.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're going to get Boo Radley.
Yeah, maybe, but that's not the consensus they came to. She said that they all came to the consensus the Broaddus's had sent the letters to themselves.
Wow. Inside job.
That's what they thought. That's what the neighborhood watch, you know, street gang thought.
Let's get into it. What's their case?
Well, the possibilities as to why they would do such a thing varied. Maybe they suffered buyer's remorse, or they realized they couldn't afford the home and concocted a bizarre scheme to get out of the sale. Or Derek Broaddus was generating some kind of insurance fraud, or they were angling for a sweet movie deal.
Well, it is interesting. The Woodses never got a letter until after they'd sold this house to the Broaddus's.
Yes, and again, I didn't dive too deep into this, but there was some weird speculation on how they afforded the house because their previous houses were a lot less, like money-wise.
Well, but he had just gotten a raise.
Also, like, people save up money to get their dream house or whatever. Like, this is where we're going to stay for the rest of our lives. So I don't put too much into that. And as far as doing this to get a movie deal, like, that is really out there.
Did it
There's
work?
No guarantee. It worked, but
what's the movie deal?
It's not guaranteed. We'll get to that. But to do all of this for that reason is a big swing.
No, I think the movie deal, if they did it themselves, I think the movie deal is a bonus. On top of you're hoping for some kind of, I don't know, how do you run that insurance scam?
I don't know how an insurance, like,
you don't
do
have insurance on your homes for hauntings or
yeah,
cultists
creepy
or
letters. Yeah. Like, what kind of scam would that be? Besides that, they didn't want to uproot their kids either because they had already started school in the area because they were expecting to move in. So the Broaddus's used an LLC to secretly buy property elsewhere in Westfield because they still didn't want to live at the Boulevard house without this being resolved.
Right.
And even back on the market, there were no buyers once interested parties read the watcher letters. So they were at least being decent and showing them what the deal was.
Right.
But it didn't really work in their favor to do that.
So who owns the house now? Did they ever sell it?
We're getting to that.
Okay.
So once they tried to sell it for a long time, it didn't work out. Their real estate lawyer proposed an idea, which was to sell the house to a developer to tear it down and split the property into two lots for two sellable homes.
Okay.
So, like, they figured a developer would be more likely to buy the space because they're not living there.
Big lot,
and then it's
cut it in
two
half.
Different homes. There's no, like, creepy 657 Boulevard situation
you
going on.
You throw up two McMansions.
Mm-hmm. Now, despite 657 Boulevard being one of the neighborhood's largest lots, dividing it in two would require the Westfield Planning Board to grant an exception. The two smaller lots would be 67.4 and 67.6 feet wide. Now, the mandate for a lot size is 70 feet.
Ooh, now we get into the true horror, zoning regulations.
Right. They figured barely a yard on either side would not be an issue, right? No, wrong. The planning board met to decide the application in January 2017 with a whopping three-hour hearing on the issue. Sounds like complete torture.
This is for this one, to resolve this one house easement issue? Okay.
Now, because rich people have nothing to do, more than 100 local residents showed up to the hearing.
Wow.
Yes.
Presumably because the watcher thing had gotten so much publicity?
Yeah, and also
or are these just grumpy HOA people?
Rich people have nothing to do. So they're like, yeah, let's go protest something that we have nothing to do with. One neighbor who lived across the street from 657 Boulevard and had a daughter in the same grade as one of the Broaddus's kids literally retained a lawyer to fight the proposal.
Wow.
So you think this person would have some sort of sympathy because they have a child as well? No, fuck you. Lawyer. The Broaddus's attorney displayed a map of the neighborhood. I fucking hope it was Derek's map. I really do. Look at this crazy man. Look at what you've done to him. He displayed a map of the neighborhood and argued.
It's in crayon or maybe those like smelly markers that smell like
coconut. There's a lot
of red
string connecting things. So he argued that this map showed several existing lots on the block that were also smaller than the 70-foot mandate. But had been approved, already exist. So, like, there's precedent for approving it. The area residents countered that they needed to make a stand about this one because, quote, our neighborhoods are constantly under attack from turf, lights, parking decks, you name it. Turf.
Yeah, turf is a big one.
That's weird. While Abby Langford, who you may remember as having been DNA tested and being a member of the suspected Langford family, stood up to say that she had spent almost 60 years looking at a magnificent, beautiful house and didn't, quote, want to be looking at it a driveway.
Interesting. So the Langfords have a specific interest. They love looking at this old house.
You could say they love watching it.
The Langfords are still serving the house.
Yes. The focus of the hearing and of the residents was on what the Broaddus's stood to gain financially from this sale, proposed sale, and what the neighborhood might lose. Now, that night, the board unanimously rejected the proposal.
Can't knock it down.
No. Or, can't knock it down, can't divide it into two lots.
Wait, they'd be allowed to knock it down if they wanted, right?
Not for two houses, but right. Yeah, like just to build a new house, but you're still at 657 Boulevard. Oh. The Broaddus's later appealed that decision, but a New Jersey judge denied their appeal. Maria Broaddus lamented, quote, I grew up in Westfield. I came back. I chose to raise my kids here. You know what we've been through. You had the ability 2.5 years into a nightmare to make it a little better. I think she's addressing this to the neighborhood residents. Mm-hmm. And you have decided that this house is more important than we are. That's really how it felt. So that sucks.
Yep. Well, they've known the house longer, Broaddus's.
Mm-hmm. Soon after that, the family received a bit of good news. A family with grown children and two big dogs agreed to rent 657 Boulevard. With a clause in the lease that let them out in case of another letter. That's fair. A couple weeks after the family began renting, Derek went to the house to complete standard landlord duties and promptly was handed an envelope that had just arrived. The letter inside began...
No.
Violent winds and bitter cold to the vile and spiteful Derek and his wench of a wife, Maria.
Wow.
Hitting below the belt.
I think it's Mike Langford.
Very subtle stuff.
This sounds like Mike Langford to me.
Your old friend?
Yeah, absolutely.
The letter was dated the same day the Broadduses gave depositions in their lawsuit against the Woodses. So that's an interesting little fact. It mentioned their investigative efforts, media coverage, renting out the home, and attempt to turn the house into two lots, among other things. A disturbing segment of the letter seemed to threaten the family, which all the letters seemed to threaten the family, right? But that read, maybe a car accident, maybe a fire, maybe something as simple as a mild illness that never seems to go away, but makes you feel sick day after day after day after day. Maybe the mysterious death of a pet. Loved ones suddenly die. Planes and cars and bicycles crash. Bones break.
Hey there. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema.
Our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.
So I think the watcher is saying, like, they can make their plane crash?
Yeah.
I don't know, like...
I mean, he's got an in at the FAA.
Apparently.
So did the renters break their lease then?
They were understandably spooked, but they agreed to stay if the Broadduses installed cameras around the house.
No way. Well, we know there's already cameras.
I think they were cameras in the house, but now there are also security cameras outside.
Yeah, Derek's got like a panic room control center in the middle of this house that's just monitors all around.
Yeah, they also had to agree to Derek crouching in the dark constantly. The Broadduses also returned to the police with the new evidence. A detective looked at a neighborhood map. It's Derek's map. And traced a circle around the house 300 yards in diameter, suggesting the watcher must be somewhere in that area. So that narrowed it down to about 10 surrounding homes. But nothing more came of it, even with the threats that were on paper. On Christmas Eve 2017, several families on and around the boulevard received envelopes in their mailboxes. Now get ready for a twist.
Uh-oh.
These were the houses of those that had been the most vocal in criticizing the Broadduses online and did not bear any postmarks.
I'm seeing where we are on time. Continue.
One of the recipients notably had written publicly on Facebook, "I wish we could go back to the days of Tar and Feathers. I have just the couple in mind." Referring to the Broadduses.
Yeah.
That's what? Charming.
This entire community hates these people.
Mm-hmm. For having, like, the audacity.
To move in?
Just the audacity. They're audacious, I guess. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Like, if it was me, I'd be like, these poor people, let's help them out.
It's just something about their broadusness that we don't like.
Too broad. Families stated that the letters accused the families of wrongly speculating about the Broadduses and included stories about recent acts of domestic terrorism in which signs of mental illness had gone unnoticed. The typed letters were signed, "Friends of the Broaddus Family."
Hmm.
When the Cut journalist Reeves Weideman asked Derek Broaddus whether he had written these new letters...
The letters defending the Broaddus family?
Yeah, from the Friends of the Broaddus family. He admitted he had.
Those letters?
Yes. as Weideman wrote, he wasn't proud of it. He hadn't even told his wife. And said they were the only anonymous letters he'd written. But this doesn't look great because people were already thinking they sent the Watcher letters to themselves.
Right.
Now they actually sent these creepy letters out.
Not to themselves, though.
No. From themselves. But this new bit of information, it turned Boulevard residents and beyond even more against the Broaddus family. People who weren't against them were now.
Now we know you send letters and lie about it.
Yeah. So it seemingly confirmed that there was a strong possibility Derek had manufactured the entire affair.
To what end?
Again, that's the question. Why would they have done it to themselves?
They didn't profit off this, it doesn't seem. Well, I guess we haven't gotten to the end of the story yet.
Right. So the cut article was released in November 2018, mm-hmm. and it like really blew up. In an episode of BuzzFeed Unsolved, a favorite show of mine, host Ryan Bergara argued that some support for the Broaddus' assertion that they never sent the real Watcher letters lies in the fact that in a later investigation, it was discovered that another family had received a letter from the Watcher around the time the Broadduses received their first.
Whoa, where?
I think it was just a neighborhood family. They didn't have like specific details, and I couldn't find it.
So another family in this neighborhood had received a Watcher letter.
Mm-hmm.
At another house?
Yes, but like with the original owners of 657 Boulevard, the Woodses, this family had already lived at their home for years with no issues and just threw the letter away.
Hmm.
So it went a little differently there.
Yeah, a little bit.
Soon after the article's publication, Netflix snapped up the feature rights to the Broaddus' story.
Oh.
And to adapt the article itself for a cool 7 figures.
That's 7 figures for the journalist or for the Broaddus family?
I think probably split between, because it was like a quote-unquote life rights thing plus the article specifically.
Well, that's a nice thing. I'll take $500,000.
Yeah. So for Netflix, Henry Joost and Ariel Schulman are attached to direct, which I find to be an interesting choice because their previous products include Paranormal Activity 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
And the 2010 documentary Catfish.
Oh, yeah, no. The way you do this right is you make it a horror story, right? It's not a movie about, well, did these people send these letters to themselves? Mm-hmm. No, it's a movie about a cult in a New England town. I guess they're not in New England. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, if they were hoaxing this entire situation to get a movie deal, well, they made it happen.
It's Hot Fuzz without the jokes.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but the house cost $1.5 million, right?
I think 1.3, yeah.
Well, so I don't know if it's worthwhile to make a 7-figure investment to get a 7-figure payday.
Well, that's the thing.
That you split with a journalist, I think?
In July 2019, the family finally sold the house, but it was at a $400,000 loss. So even if you made $500,000 from selling the rights to the story, you're still making a very small profit because of that loss.
Especially over the course of several years and where this is a guy who I think is making a lot of money at his actual job anyway.
Yeah, or at least was. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it was worth the 5 years of
No, like I don't think it makes sense to
do
that.
No, it's a 5-year pain in the ass for this, for making a little money or maybe losing some.
Yeah, maybe $100,000. So I did some digging and I did find that there is a Twitter account for a Derek Broaddus that purports to be run by the Derek Broaddus in this story. And he posts often about the Watcher.
I'm sure he does.
DNA testing and crime and like other related topics. That is his passion. It is his crusade, and he posts about it a lot and politics and stuff.
So do you believe Derek?
Well, do I believe this account is him?
Do you believe that he didn't send the letters?
I do believe that. I can't imagine the convoluted scheme that you would think this is a good idea to do.
Right. Unless it was the buyer's remorse thing and then it just got away from them.
Right.
That's also a good movie. That's also a good movie. But
yeah.
That's a good comedy. The one where the guy thinks he has a great plan and then he has to keep, you know.
But is it the producers?
No, I technically I think it's season 5 of The Wire, which
spoiler alert.
It's the weakest one.
So, in November 2019, this Twitter account posted, quote, 1 year ago, this article came out. Thanks for telling part of our story at Reeves Wideman. We still have the female DNA. Still no arrest. Victims shouldn't have to beg cops to do their job. Still no correction / apology.
Thanks for telling part of our story. A little bit of shade.
Yeah. So it seems as though the Broaddus family no longer resides in Westfield, New Jersey, but the watcher of 657 Boulevard has continued to reside in their collective psyche.
And probably in the neighborhood if it wasn't Derek Broaddus.
Now, what do you think after hearing all that? That's about the end of the story as we have it right now.
What's your theory? Well, I want to see Boo Radley. There wasn't enough information.
What, you want to judge him based on his look?
No.
Is he creepy looking?
No. I want to hear him talk. I want to, you know, there wasn't, they said he was a suspect and they said he was kind of a weird character, but I want to see what that
means.
Looks and sounds like. Yeah. Is he constantly making furtive, like, handshaking gestures at the family in the house?
Well, I think he was already kind of a character in the neighborhood.
Yeah, local kook.
Yeah, so, like I said, I think it's very dangerous to kind of go down that road of judging someone based on just being eccentric or awkward or possibly ill in some way.
Right,
no, being like, oh, they're weird. Like, they did this.
Right, but I'd like to see him speak in a straight line for 5 minutes without talking about outsiders coming in here. And, you know,
it's not Alabama or whatever.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to judge.
Sure.
Who did it? Based on not knowing any of these people, but I do feel pretty secure in the idea that I don't think they did it to themselves initially. Now, do I think Derek should have sent those letters after? No, it really hurt his credibility, and it was a stupid thing to do.
Yeah.
But I genuinely don't think they started it. I don't know.
I don't know what their angle is. Again, unless, I do like the idea that Derek was like, you know what, I don't want to move into this house. Let me just send a couple letters to...
Such a crazy scheme.
Get out of it. And then he thinks that's going to just, okay, we'll be able to reverse the sale because they, quote, didn't tell us about this stalker. And then it gets out of control. And now he has to keep writing these threatening letters to himself for like years.
It's so crazy. It's a crazy thing to do, but people have done crazier, I guess.
Yeah, but I know. I think it's more likely that there is just a really grumpy neighbor.
I think they crossed the line of really grumpy when they made those weird threats about planes. And
everyone involved in this story is white, right? There's no racial tension that comes into this?
No, the Broadduses weren't.
It's not like the Broaddus's were a black family moving in and racists who were mad.
That would have been like a completely different angle that I think that the cops would have certainly looked into in a different way. But no, it's just a bunch of white people being mad at white people, as far as I know.
I was still thinking of Snoop Dogg, that's all.
We're always thinking of Snoop Dogg. So.
Wow. Yeah, I think there's probably a grumpy neighbor who doesn't like outsiders.
And just talks like that. Arrest that guy. He's talking like that.
No, exactly. Yeah. They should look for the one who's doing all the furtive handshaking at the house.
Well, until then, this is an unsolved case.
Yeah, very.
We don't know the real answers.
Very interesting. Very creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Caroline.
You're welcome.
I think we'll take a break and come back with a little news.
Wait, could it be? It's a Me and My Boo Prime and Punishment sequel. That's right, folks. We've got an update on the exciting story of Zach Bagans and the Tiger King.
What?
And just like in the documentary, current zoo owner Jeff Lowe managed to wriggle in there somehow. Apparently, since the paranormal investigation that recently attracted police investigation, thanks to the alerting cadaver dogs on the premises, Jeff Lowe gifted Ghost Adventures star Zach Bagans with a treasure trove of Tiger King super authentic merch, including Joe Exotic's own jeweled crown, pill bottles, flashy clothing, wedding trinkets, Joe's very own penis pump, and the late Travis Maldonado's glass pipe. It seems that Zach will be displaying these items at his haunted museum in Las Vegas. Though, genuinely, I still don't know why Ghost Adventures was investigating the zoo, nor why any of these items would be haunted. Unless it's a haunted penis pump.
Wow, here's the meth pipe of a suicide victim.
And his lover's penis pump.
Yeah.
Dark. Dark, but maybe not haunted. I don't know. Maybe the haunted collector has to get in on this.
Yeah, let's give him a call.
Your old friend.
Mm-hmm.
This week on the Prime side of Prime and Punishment, where we review something we recently streamed on Amazon Prime, because Prime rhymes with crime and we watched way too much TV this week, we give the 1996 movie version of The Crucible a rent. Daniel Day-Lewis is as shattering as ever, and I found myself returning to Winona Ryder's performance as the young harlot Abigail Williams with more appreciation for her work. What'd you think, Sean?
Oh, boy. She was big in this movie. She was real big. She was Winona Ryder, and I loved it. Everyone else in the movie, I just felt like everyone was doing a different thing than Winona was, but I feel like that about Winona a lot.
But in a good way or a bad way?
Yes.
Okay. How'd you feel about DDL?
He's the greatest. He was the greatest. And
the goat.
Yeah, I was happy to see him hang, but only because it was like he was doing what was right.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. The Giles Corey more weight thing I thought would have more
weight.
Oh, there was plenty of that. It felt a little like, well, we just know we have to get this scene in here.
Yeah, it is kind of just inserted in there. But that's kind of the deal. Like, he didn't hang with everyone else. It's always, you know, 19 people died by hanging and one by stones, you know?
Right.
So he's like, kind of always the outlier. But I know you love Giles Corey.
Right.
I know
it's
you
my
love
favorite,
his story.
It's my favorite part of that story. But it was interesting to me that, like, it's like Arthur Miller was just like, well, this is the best part of this story. It doesn't really have to do with the rest of it, but I have to have it in here. So I guess I have to just insert Giles a couple times earlier, being grumpy.
Yeah, it's just such a famous part of the story. But, you know, like I said, even in the real life situation, it was kind of this separate thing. He wasn't even with his wife, who was also hanged. So,
right.
What would you give it out of 5 stars?
I think this is another 4.5. No, this... it's tough. I really, really enjoyed it. It's probably a 4.
I'm going to go 3.5 just because it's one of my very favorite plays and I'm really grading it strictly, but I would definitely recommend it.
I could watch Daniel Day-Lewis paint a fence.
And he'd probably become a professional fence painter just to paint the fence in the movie.
That's true. Hey, cast him in Tom Sawyer. He'd be great.
Gather round. It's time for Poe's Cryptid Corner. From our friends from around the way at News 12 Westchester comes the strange tale of a reported Bigfoot spotted in the Hudson Valley of New York.
A Bigfoot?
A Bigfoot. And in the Hudson Valley, which is one of our favorite areas to travel, right?
Absolutely.
On July 2nd, a supposed Bigfoot chased a woman in Hyde Park, jumping up in a tree above her and moving from tree to tree like an even hairier Tarzan. No word on how she escaped, but apparently she was able to do so since she later told her story to, quote, leading Hudson Valley Bigfoot researcher Gail Beatty. I would love to have that title. I want that title.
Not to lift the kimono too much, but...
With the kimono!
I think we are doing... we'll be covering some Bigfoots in an episode coming up here. But to your knowledge, do Bigfoots jump into trees?
So first, if we are going to cover it, which I think is under your jurisdiction, we're going to have to establish if it's Bigfoots, Big Feet, Bigfoot, but plural. I need to know.
Bigfoots. What's the difference between Bigfoots and Bigfoot, but plural?
Like,
oh, you mean
the
an
Bigfoot,
S-less plural, like,
but yes. Like cannoli.
Like moose.
Sure. I went the Italian
cannoli,
way.
Cannoli.
I'm a stereotype.
Cannoli
myself.
Is the plural word.
Yes, cannolo is a singular. That's why. That's why I meant no
cannolo.
S. Cannolis ain't a thing. Anyway, Gail Beatty's team showed News 12 photos and molds of large footprints and images of hairy figures in the trees, as well as a eerie howling siren-like sound.
What do you mean images?
They were blurry photos.
Okay.
They were Bigfoot pictures, so they were blurry photos of bushes with something that was hairy behind them.
Yeah.
And they played this pretty eerie sound of like this howl, this like siren wailing howl. And they
you
all
mean a siren?
It sounds like a siren, but you could also tell that it's like an animal or even a person. Like it could have easily been a person that was doing it. And they all were purported to be evidence of a local man ape. We'll be sure to follow the news and deliver you guys any more reports of Empire State Squatches. That's it for the third episode of Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Ain't It Scary. And check out our website at ain'titscary.com. Please subscribe to the show and throw us a 5-star review on iTunes, because we'll be forever grateful. See you next Tuesday.
Show created by Carrie Ferrante and Sean McCabe. Music by Kyle Ryan.
This has been a production of Longboy Media.
On the morning of August 1st, 1966, shots ring out from the observation deck of the clock tower on the University of Texas campus. It marks the infamous beginning of the modern era of mass shootings in America.
You're listening to Stop the Killing podcast. Join us as we take you behind the crime scene tape to explain global mass shootings and mass attacks. I'm Sarah Ferris, but more importantly, this is Catherine Schweit, the former head of the FBI's active shooter program.
I spent 5 years as the FBI's top executive looking for answers to the mass shooting crisis. I've been at the shooting scenes. I've traced heroic acts of bravery. And I've sat silently and listened to the heart-wrenching stories from survivors.
Amongst this horror, there is hope. We all hold the key to stop the killing. You just need to know how to unlock the door. Download Stop the Killing and be part of the solution. Search Stop the Killing on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects.